As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, National Title Game Reaction Edition. The University of Georgia Bulldogs are your 2021 season national champions. They beat Alabama 33-18. As Nick Saban said to Kirby Smart, they kicked Alabama's ass in the fourth quarter. But I didn't know if that was going to happen. David Ubben joining me. You hear me and David on our SEC show, Football and Grits.
Yes.
And David, I thought when Stetson Bennett did the Garo-Yeprimian, where the ball just floats out of the back of his hand and it's recovered by Alabama. They reviewed it. They said Alabama got it in, you know, deep in Georgia territory. I was convinced the game was over at that point.
Well, I thought it was tough because I thought both sides, however that play played out, both sides were going to be furious about it. Because
yes,
the fumble was close. I thought it was a fumble. The recovery was real close. I'm not going to venture a guess on that one. It was very close.
Because it looked like he kind of tightroped the sideline.
But it felt like one of those things. It was like, inevitable. Here comes Bama again. So props for Stetson Bennett for getting off the mat, for Georgia for rallying. I mean, that seemed like the turning point in the game. And Andy, it was. It just turned the other way.
Yeah. And the thing was, Georgia didn't fade away from that. And I tell you what, Georgia's red zone defense was pretty outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it felt like Bama needed to score from 50 yards out. Like once they got within five, it felt like, okay, you may as well send the field goal team on.
Yeah, well, you look at that Latu play. He breaks out. They go 7 yards. They catch him. How big is that play in retrospect? Because what is it? Is it 13-3?
They went to Latu again on the next play.
Yes.
And he dropped the ball in the end zone.
Yes. And is it, 13-3 at that point?
Yeah.
And then you're a double-digit deficit. You're probably feeling a little bit of pressure. You're probably throwing it a little more than you'd like to in an ideal world. But when you're down 9-3, the game feels totally different, and Georgia sort of stayed in their game plan, stayed doing what they're doing.
This all happened in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Bama goes up 18-13.
Mm-hmm.
They try for the two-point conversion. Again, Georgia's defense inside the five-yard line looked impenetrable, with the exception of the Latu touchdown.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, this game is so much about redemption in so many different ways, but the Georgia defense, I think, you have to start there with how badly they played in the SEC championship game. We've been talking about them all season as the best defense we've seen in a decade since 2011 Bama. And then, of course, after the SEC championship, it doesn't change what we saw in the 12 previous games, but you're wondering, well, are these guys just kind of paper tigers when they really get pushed, and how good is the SEC really? But tonight, I don't know if they reclaimed the throne of the best defense in a decade, but I think you can make that argument. And,
yeah,
and the way that they played, especially in the red zone, is why they win the national
Bama
title.
Bama scored one touchdown. It was on a short field.
Mm-hmm.
And they let Bama move the ball and let them get into the red zone, but they forced them to kick field goals.
Threes, not sevens, will win you titles.
Yeah.
We learned that tonight.
Yeah, and listen, there's a man by the name of Ari Wasserman who appears on this podcast frequently. He was right and he was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He was right in that he made fun of me on Friday and said, I know we swore that we'd never pick against Nick Saban again, but he said he was sticking with his original pick of Georgia to win the national, because we both picked Georgia to win the national title. In fact, I went back and looked at our preseason predictions in The Athletic. I predicted Georgia to lose to Alabama in the SEC title game and then beat Alabama in the national title
game.
Look
at Andy on this. Look at Andy.
I flopped on it. Yeah. I flipped. So I don't get no credit.
We were talking about our picks, and I said, Andy, if you picked from the preseason, you got to roll with it. And you said, no, I got to go Bama.
Well, and I'll tell you why. And I'm happy as a former walk-on to be proven wrong. Because I wasn't sure Georgia's offense was going to be able to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
They did. It wasn't perfect, but it was enough to get it done. Stetson Bennett, down the stretch, was fantastic. He had the long touchdown to, was it A.D. Mitchell?
Yes,
down the deep ball. In the right corner.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thrown a pretty deep ball all season if he just had time.
The ball to Pickens, his only catch of the night, a little overthrown, but still. I mean, that's listen, Stetson Bennett tonight, zero interceptions, the kind of weird fumble turnover, but a tough night for the bench Stetson Bennett.
And that's what Ari said. The only way this would happen is if JT Daniels came in, or but no, Stetson Bennett was enough. He was good enough.
I gotta tell you, you know what I like about this game is, Andy, like most human beings, I like to make sense of the world around me.
Yes,
not a big believer in Horcruxes or curses or all these things. Not a big believer.
I don't get to talk Harry Potter with Ari.
Exactly.
So happy to hear about this.
Not a big believer in that stuff.
Dementors came out tonight.
Yeah, but having watched the SEC championship, Andy, we watched the whole season. Georgia, I don't even think it was close. They were a lot better than Bama all season. And I watched that game and I said, I don't know how you can't really buy into the idea that Georgia is a little bit shook about it. I don't know that you can say afraid, but they did not look like themselves.
Well, the question we were asking ourselves after the Alabama-Georgia SEC championship game was that Alabama's best and Georgia's worst, or was that Alabama growing up mm-hmm. as a young team, and this is what you were going to expect from that point? And I think watching them against Cincinnati did give you some sense that maybe that was their best game.
Yeah,
against Georgia. Maybe that was the best they could play, and that Georgia was probably going to play better than they did, which meant it would be close.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. When they were trading field goals, I thought, okay, Georgia is playing better, but still not well enough to win. And that was when Georgia punched in the touchdown, because Jalen Carter blocked the field goal, and then Jalen Carter delivered a crushing lead blocker to pop that touchdown. That's when I thought, okay, maybe they have a chance. But again, then you get the Stetson Bennett fumble. That was in the fourth quarter.
I know. Again, props to them for rallying. And I think, too, you know, this team, again, I'm just glad we got to see them perform the way that we've seen them perform all season and not have to worry about, well, they didn't bring their A game, they didn't show up, and all these things. We got to see Georgia tonight play like the Georgia team we've seen all season long.
I'm also glad both teams in the fourth quarter made it a fun game to watch, because it was not a fun game to watch the first three
quarters. I didn't hate the first half. Again, we've had conversations about the casual college football fan on Football and Grits. You and Ari have talked about it a little bit. I don't begrudge the people who hated the first half. I felt like it was a pretty compelling chess match of watching the moves and trying to figure out, okay, where are you going to go here? I get the folks that were not on board with that. It was really interesting to see what they were doing, all the misdirections, because both these teams knew they didn't feel comfortable that we can block these guys. Both these teams knew that.
Right.
And so how do you get guys in space? How do you get some time? How do you throw some misdirection and set up some blocks so that you can have some sort of time to throw that? I mean, on the Stetson Bennett deep ball to George Pickens, there's two decoys on that play.
Yeah.
So you can get him a little time. You get the linebackers thinking. You get the defensive ends holding up a little bit. And then you get the deep ball to George Pickens. That I liked that. And the second half was a lot more fun in a traditional sense, but I enjoyed that first half.
So does the question of what if Jameson Williams doesn't get hurt, does that become the new what if Colt didn't get hurt?
Well, I mean, you know, listen, I think we have to be careful when we talk about this, because it's not like, you know, it's necessarily, well, George didn't earn this, or George lessening what George did, but you're already coming into this game, no John Mechie.
Right.
No, and then you lose Jameson Williams on a really bad injury. I that did not look good. I don't want to speculate.
That they replayed it even more than – I think they replayed it twice. I didn't need to see it again.
When the guy's grabbing at his knee long before he's down, it's not good, and that's tough to see. And, you know, how much more of Jameson Williams do we need to see this season to know? I mean, especially on that last drive, you saw it.
Bryce Young couldn't get any separation.
Bryce Young's trying to get going. I mean, if he had completed, you know, if he scores a touchdown on that drive with no receivers.
Legendary,
like,
yes.
That's 10 times better than the Iron Bowl drive. It's not as long, but against Georgia's defense with no receivers. I mean, he had Mechie and Williams in the Iron Bowl.
No, he didn't. Williams had the targeting.
That's right.
Penalty.
Williams
was out
with the targeting on the punt, right?
Right.
But yeah, you have no receivers, and the young guys, you know, Hall had, you know, Colin Brooks, they're trying to find Slade Bolden a little bit. Latu had a nice game, 100 yards for him. You know, they just didn't have the weapons. And you felt for Bryce Young, who clearly was forcing it a little bit, throwing up balls up and asking his receivers to make plays.
I think this would have been Saban's best coaching job had they won the national title.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree. This was a really good team. But how many times has Saban gone up in a national championship or in a season like this, and there's been a clear team that's better than them all season, and then you face the team that's better than you in the national championship?
They haven't, because when they got beat by Clemson badly in the national championship game, Alabama had been the better team all season, but Clemson was clearly the better team that night.
Yeah,
this was a case where Georgia was the better team all season. Alabama was inconsistent all year. But they had played, and Alabama had crushed them. And you just kind of wondered where everybody would fall. And I know I've said this like four times already, but that Stetson Bennett fumble happened in the fourth quarter.
It's crazy.
They could have completely bagged it.
It felt like they were
point.
Going to. It felt like it was. It's like this is going to go down as the Kirby fake punt. All these maddening decisions. The second and 26. These plays that have snake bitten a better Georgia team over the course of Kirby Smart's tenure. It felt like, well, we're going to get this weird kind of half fluky fumble where he's not really trying to recover the ball and just happens to toe touch. Like, there was no effort to toe touch there. He just did it on accident.
I don't think he thought he was recovering a fumble.
No way. And it just gets lucky.
And I remember watching it live and going, that's a fumble.
Yeah.
I think I said Garo Yeprimian. I don't know if I got the word Yeprimian out.
Because he pushed it so far forward. Yeah. Live, I didn't think it was that close. But on replay, it looked pretty clearly a fumble. Well, he recovered it was unbelievably close depending on the angle that you looked at. I think whatever was called on the field was going to stand.
But the fact that the Georgia players rallied did not let that sink them. Because, I mean, at that point, a five-point lead in a game where there had been two touchdowns and a bunch of field goals
felt
almost insurmountable.
And we talked about it, you know, earlier. It felt like, you know, that Alabama had this weird voodoo over Georgia, where Georgia hadn't been the better team for a lot of the Kirby Smart era, but they've played a better game against them more often than not. And it felt like one of the things, I was like, well, if you really do have this hold over the Georgia program, that's the kind of play that Bama goes and wins the game 36-10.
Right.
And it was the exact opposite. And I think not only did Georgia win this game, they were the better team. There's nothing, all the fluky stuff went for Bama.
Yeah.
And then you rally from this, like, pit of despair,
right?
And you do this, like, this has got to be unbelievably cathartic for Georgia fans beyond 40 years.
Yeah,
but
you got a fan base that essentially has spent, for most of them, a lifetime looking up, waiting for the piano to fall on their head.
Yes,
and then the piano fell on their head
like three times. Yeah.
And it didn't matter.
But I just think, Andy, the poetry and the symmetry of this title for Georgia. Bama's been the boogeyman for so long. I believe the bogeyman confused Kirby Smart earlier in the week. But, like, you've seen it. It's been this hovering thing that's defined your program for the entirety of the Kirby Smart era. And then you get whacked when you shouldn't have in the SEC title game. And then you win the title. You beat Bama on the biggest stage. And you beat them in the way that you do, where there's no doubt. You're in a pit. You climb out of the pit. And then you no doubt it. And then you put some icing on the cake with the pick six, despite Kirby Smart's best attempts to get him to go down. And, Andy, a good chunk of the coaches in the San Antonio Marriott this week where you could hear him as he's running, go down, go
yeah,
down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
the coaches were having a heart attack.
We are in a hotel room in San Antonio. We were at the coaches convention. And so we were around a bunch of college football coaches.
A lot of college coaches.
And I was standing next to former Oklahoma center Ty Darlington,
yes,
who's on the Oklahoma staff, and he's screaming, go down, go down. You see Kirby Smart on the screen screaming, go down, go down. And it was like, and you saw the scene at the after the touchdown when Keely Ringo comes up and Kirby, you know, puts his hands around his helmet and he's smiling at him. And I'm just thinking of the Lou Brown line in Major League to Willie Mays Hayes. Great catch. Don't ever up and do it again.
You can't blame the kid. Yeah. In every way, in every metric, I mean, it's a math issue because Alabama has zero chance of winning if you go down. And Alabama has about a 2% chance of winning if you keep so. But I can't blame the kid for wanting this moment.
I realize this is an audio medium, but you're going to see this picture. Like, you're probably going to listen to this podcast in the morning. You'll probably have already seen this picture. I'm going to show you this picture, David. It is of Jordan Davis holding the national title trophy. Carmen Mandado from Getty Images took it.
Okay, I have not seen
this
yet.
This will be the defining image of this national title.
Does he have the Nirvana pregame shirt back on?
Does not have the Bass Pro Shops hat. I don't believe it's the Alabama national title hat that they gave Nakobe Dean. But
let's see this.
It is this is Georgia. This is everyone affiliated with the University of Georgia after 41 years. Here's Jordan Davis. Your thoughts, David Oven.
Oh, man. That's incredible. Listen, I love Jordan Davis, like, just as a person in general. Great, great kid. I was telling Andy today.
Oh, this is a great story.
So I was I had to go to Charlotte for the Nagurski Awards about a month ago. It was in December, the day after the SEC Championship game. So we're the day after the SEC Championship game. And two of the candidates were Will Anderson and Jordan Davis.
Yeah.
So this is the Monday after the SEC Championship. They're having to sort of hang out all day. I'm kind of around them on behalf of the FWAA. And we're kind of just talking. And Jordan Davis is, you know, this is about a couple weeks before Christmas. And he's like, you know, I'm kind of torn right now because I'm trying to buy my mom a Peloton, but my mom's my financial manager.
Right.
My
NIL money.
So I don't know how to get $1,600 out without her knowing about it. And this was a very serious dilemma in Mr.
Like
Jordan Davis.
He's worried about it, yeah.
But just like Jordan Davis, you know.
Jordan Davis is going to get, what's the signing bonus for the number 5 pick in the draft?
It's decent.
Gonna be a lot of money.
His mom's going to have to have a lot of money to manage. But Jordan Davis, I think, you know, he's been one of the most beloved players all season. He's the kind of guy that just makes you love college football.
Yeah.
Like Georgia through and through. He's directing the band on senior day. And he's, you know, just taking up space, an incredible player, an incredible personality. And you see that in that photo. I mean, the kid just, you've got to be so happy.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing about that team. And, you know, Ari always says stars matter, and he's right. You know, this was the most talented team in the country. Based on the 24/7 talent composite, they've had number one recruiting classes or number two recruiting classes, but
the cornerstone is a 3-star.
Jordan Davis was a 3-star.
Yes, sir.
That they identified as, and this is when you hear coaches say, "I do my own evaluations." They don't all. Well, I mean, they all do their own evaluations. They don't all not care what 24/7 and ESPN and Rivals say, but the best ones, the Kirby Smarts, the Nick Sabans, the Dabo Sweeneys, they don't care. They do their own evaluation, and they're not worried about what you rank because they've evaluated enough players. They know what they're looking for. So Kirby staff evaluated Jordan Davis, and to them, he was exactly what they needed for their defense, and even though he was a 3-star. But so you've got him. You have a former walk-on in Stetson Bennett. You have a 5-star in Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter was either a high 4-star
something
or a 5-star.
Like that.
Yep. Keely Ringo was a 5-star, the pick 6, you know. So they mixed it all in. Like they had spots where they didn't have 5-star coverage,
yes,
for lack of a better term, and they found a way with players that they had developed.
Andy, I think, you know, not to derail the podcast with Tennessee talk, but Jeremy Pruitt always used to like to say, "I like big men." And listen, I think that's a philosophy that Nick Saban shares.
I believe
Kirby Smart shares.
Jimbo Fisher said it better when he won the national title. I believe he said, I prefer grown ass men.
Yes, that sounds about right.
And that is the Georgia D line.
Yes.
Epitomizes the phrase grown ass man.
And I think, you know, you look at those guys and they've been so dominant all season long. And I was happy to see them get the redemption and not have to deal with 12 really incredible games being derailed by two. And I think they earned some of that back tonight.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Does this forever change the way people think of Kirby Smart?
Well, I mean, it has to, right? You look at active college coaches with a national title. I mean, what, where there's four now? Mac, Dabo, Jimbo, Saban, Kirby.
Says five.
So five.
Yeah.
Am I missing anyone? Apologies. I'm sure I'm missing somebody.
No, when Les Miles was coaching Kansas, I used to always mess this up.
Yes, because... and then Orgeron is out and Les is out.
Yeah.
So I believe we have five. So, I mean, I think everyone would have argued that Kirby was in that rarefied air. And Andy...
Chizik's a defensive coordinator now. Does that count?
So, no, it does not. Okay. But we need the Kevin Garnett anything is possible gift, because Andy, your team too, if you can just recruit four or five top two classes, you too can win an national title.
That's right. That's all you gotta do. So, but I say this on behalf of my alma mater and all the other SEC fan bases that like to poke fun at the dogs. What are you going to say now that your 1980 jokes have been retired?
Not much, Andy. It's going to be quiet around Atlanta. I think, you know, I'm also glad, because I'm also not a big narrative guy either. And I think the discourse, if Georgia had lost this game.
Oh, it would have been awful.
I can't even. Yeah.
It would have been awful.
It's just like, oh, Kirby can't get it done. It's like, dude, just what? Like, the dude had the best team in the country this year. They lost a really good Bama team. Like, sometimes teams lose games.
If you keep winning the SEC East and or the
you're
SEC.
You're going to keep getting bites at the apple. And eventually you're going to do this.
You're going to break through. And that's the thing. I mean, I don't want to go too far ahead, but I remember thinking when Kirby got hired, if he's the right hire, and I didn't know if he was or not, but the only reason I say this is because Nick Saban always said this, like, if the right person gets to Georgia, it's game over.
Well, I think, Andy, do we share the belief that Georgia's the best job in the country?
Yes.
Yes. We are part of that group. And I think you're seeing tonight the ceiling on this job. I think the ceiling on this job is higher than Alabama. It's higher than LSU. It's higher than everyone. Atlanta talent, fan base, facilities. Obviously, I think
Atlanta talent, but they'll go where they got to go. I mean,
I agree, but it's hard to pull
Bauer
guys
scored
out of
a touchdown. He's from Napa, California.
Yes,
Keely Ringo's from Scottsdale, Arizona. So they don't care where you're from.
This is
they're
true.
Gonna get you.
Well, we don't want to derail the conversation too far from the game, but I'll be interested to see what happens to the Brock Bowers, the Bryce Youngs, these West Coast talents with Mr. Lincoln Riley in town. I'll be curious to see if Alabama and Georgia can pull those guys. But either way, you got a bunch of guys, usually what, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars every year that grew up wanting to play for the Dogs, and you got to not screw that up rather than you got to win some battles. And I think that is, to me, as big as anything. And then, of course, the proximity to Atlanta, all these things. But Georgia tonight, you know, for the people who believe that Georgia's the best job, the biggest knock to that, which I agree with, is, well, if it's the best job, why can't they win more?
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see over the next decade, they're going to win some more.
And, let's see, can you reload every, because that's what's most amazing about what Nick Saban's been able to do, is they are in the mix every year. They are talented enough every year to have a chance. And no matter how many assistants leave, no matter who goes where, they're back. So Georgia loses Dan Lanning to become the head coach at Oregon. There will be other coaches who get picked off that staff. That's just how it goes. And how does Kirby Smart respond? How does he replace guys that he loses? Can he do it as well as Nick Saban has?
That's the test that we have not seen Dabo have to do, that Nick does tremendously. But, Andy, I will say, one thing we have not hit on yet is Georgia has kind of reset the blueprint a little bit, because we've looked at this. I wrote about this after the SEC championship game, because I was wondering, is this team flawed because they have Stetson Bennett at quarterback? Because I believe it's every national champion since 2015 or 14.
Since Jacob Coker. Jacob Coker was 2015.
Has had either a Heisman winner or a number one pick at quarterback.
Yeah.
Or a first round pick, I believe. Not a number one pick. Either a Heisman winner or a first round pick. And Georgia does not. They have a guy who can make some plays in Stetson Bennett, but their five star didn't get in tonight. And
A couple of their five stars didn't get in.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But Andy, for Georgia to be able to do this and not have a superstar at quarterback, a guy that is throwing for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, is pretty amazing and a testament to, for all the resetting and the cyclical nature of college football. And the SEC is an offensive league now. You got to play some offense, but they won this title because of defense and with defense all
and
year long.
I think it's interesting because the SEC obviously had gone very much toward the offenses that, the LSU team in 2019 is maybe the best college offense we've ever seen.
Yep.
The SEC was looking more like the Big 12 used to look. The Big 12 was actually going back toward defense.
A lot of 17-14 in the Big 12 these days.
I think this is probably the year the defense struck back. You've had based on rule change and everything else. And I think that the 2008 clock rule change, which caused the up-tempo offenses to explode, I think that was so drastic and so hard for defensive coaches to adjust to. It took this long for them to come up with multiple different, because it's not just what Jim Haycock does at Iowa State with the drop and eight. Brent Venables has done a lot of things at Clemson to run a dominant defense opposite that kind of offense. Cause a lot of it is your own team and the way you practice and everything else that causes it too. I think it's taken that long for defenses to figure out how to adjust.
Well, you look at right now, you look across the sport, right? For the last, I don't know if it's the last decade or so, but there's been some schemes that just defenses could not stop. For a while, it was the Baylor offense. Then it was everybody's running RPOs on every play, and defenses are lost, and the defensive coaches are screaming when there's an offensive lineman 4 yards downfield that's not getting called. There's not a lot of scheme right now in the sport that just defenses can't stop, and Georgia stopped a lot of different schemes this year.
Well, and the thing about Alabama's offense is it's this Frankenstein's monster.
It's a mix of all the things that basically make defenses hate the world.
Nick Saban's gone through, four or five offensive coordinators in the last seven years, but the offense has been the offense, and they've just tacked on the things that work, and they drag it out when they play a defense that is susceptible to it.
And they can do anything. We've seen it. You look at how they played against Ole Miss, how they played against Cincinnati, how they played against Georgia the first time. They had a different game plan. Alabama tried to run the ball a little bit tonight. Brian Robinson runs for 68 tonight.
They had to, because Georgia was heating up Bryce Young.
Yeah,
in a way
22 carries for Brian Robinson. They didn't do that in the first game. They were up the whole game. I think he only had 16.
Georgia was heating up Bryce Young in a way that they did not try to do in the first game. In the first game, they basically said, we're going to hope that our D linemen can beat their O linemen and cover. And then they realized they couldn't cover for that long.
Andy, do I get credit for a correct pick? Because on The Athletic today, I said, I reserve the right to reverse my pick if Bryce Young is running for his life in the first quarter.
No, you don't. Because I wrote an entire story about how Georgia needed to change.
And they did that tonight. We've been talking about this for a month, and they had to do some different things. They had to bring some pressure from some unexpected places. Georgia, the defensive line played good tonight, but they got some free rushers. They had to have some situations where they got free rushers.
That's what I wrote in that story, and I was talking to some offensive line coaches about it, and the best pass rusher is not the most athletic one. It's the one the offensive line is too confused to block.
Yep.
Like that is, and Georgia got that going quite a few times where they had done a lot of delay, like green dog type blitzes throughout the year. They did it a little bit in the first game, but not as much. This time it really seemed like they would bring a guy hard inside to pull one of the tackles in and then loop a guy around after he would wait a beat and loop around.
And now Bryce has got somebody in his face trying to make a throw. And we saw that tonight. I mean, that's what happened on the last pick. He's got a guy in his face. The first pick, I believe he did. There are a couple other plays where he's forcing balls that he doesn't want to get rid of. And he's got a guy flying
at him. You could tell pre-snap when he was going to get blown up. Mm-hmm. Like, because they're all up at the line of scrimmage and you don't know which guys are coming.
Yep.
And that's what flustered Alabama all season.
Yeah.
That's what flustered Alabama against Auburn, against LSU, against Texas A&M. And
Georgia duplicated a lot of those things. Yeah. And I think, again, I think they thought in that SEC championship game, we got the dudes, we can beat them. And they learned they couldn't. And tonight, you know, they got a little bit more fancy, a little bit more creative, and got to Bryce Young. And that, you know, we thought that would be the difference in this game. If Georgia was going to win, they're going to pressure Bryce Young. They did it tonight. They win. I mean, there you go. That's the ball game.
So, obviously, Georgia's going to have a ton to replace on defense, but they've been recruiting well. Mm-hmm. So you and you know, those games were so lopsided this year. A lot of those guys got significant snaps this season. So they, similar to Alabama most years, they'll have people who have played a decent amount of snaps going into their new roles.
You need
roles.
Them to grow up, but you got the pieces. You're not wondering, where'd all our guys go?
I'm assuming Stetson Bennett's the quarterback. He's got a free year, right? He doesn't have to be.
Andy, we don't need to have this conversation right now, but I think if I was a betting man, I'd bet on JT Daniels next fall. I really do.
What about Brock Vandegrift?
I don't think that's going to happen.
What about the quarterback who just led them to a national title? Who can come back?
Here's the thing. We all lived through the Jalen Hurts era, Andy. And I think Kirby saw the same thing. And you go through the offseason, you see how it goes. But if JT Daniels is healthy all offseason, it's going to be weird. It's going to be hard. There's going to be, you know, certainly a lot of carnival barkers on both sides. But if I was a betting man right now as who starts more games in 2022, I think I'm betting JT Daniels.
I am not touching that bet.
Okay.
If it involves Georgia quarterbacks, I'm not touching it.
Okay.
I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. What if somebody made you bet? This is a gun to your head bet, Andy.
This is so hard. Like, if you're Stetson Bennett, and this was your fifth season of college football, like, do you just say, I'm good with never having to buy a drink in the state of Georgia again?
That's an interesting question.
I don't think he's
going to. Now, that's an interesting question.
I don't think he's going to be like that. I think he's super competitive, and he's going to try to make an NFL roster. Mm-hmm. Like, no. I think he's going to say, look, this is my team. I just took these guys the national title. You try, come take it from me.
I think it was really, you know, seeing him like in tears on the sidelines. Like, again, so cathartic for Georgia, just in general. I think we've seen, you know, Georgia has built itself into an NFL factory as well, but they still haven't gotten over the hump. And like seeing Georgia or seeing Alabama or seeing Clemson win it and seeing all these things as we've seen the last few years, it, you know, you're happy for the kids and all that stuff. But man, this is the most meaningful national title since what? I guess probably the first time Clemson won it, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I mean, so the LSU one, none of those guys were around the previous LSU national title. I mean, they were all in elementary school. Mm-hmm. So I think that was pretty meaningful for them.
Yeah, I suppose. But it wasn't in the same way.
But that team just
blowing through
destroyed everybody.
And Clemson wasn't really a bully in the same way that Alabama had been to Georgia.
Clemson was avenging a heartbreaking national title game loss.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing. Alabama and Clemson played two classic national title games in a row. And so both were cathartic for each team in their own way. Because that Alabama one in 2015, Jacob Croker was the starting quarterback, Derrick Henry on that team. It's obviously a very talented Alabama. Jonathan Allen, Dalvin Tomlinson, was very young Daron Payne, I believe. But he wasn't on the team yet, but they're a very talented team, but one of Saban's better coaching jobs, and also the first of the new Alabama.
Yeah.
Where they had changed their philosophies.
Is this what we want football to be, Alabama 2.0? Yeah.
Because, you know, they didn't have the 330-pound nose tackle anymore. They didn't have, you know, or 360 pounds if we're going back to Terrence Cody.
Yes.
They were playing the five DBs that had all been recruited as corners. And really, the way kind of everybody shifted to. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
I'm interested to see what the reaction is in if this Georgia sort of victory and this way that they played this season, if we see, you know, more defensive coaches getting jobs. We saw Dan Lanning. If you see, what are the echoes, the ripples of this win over the next 2-3 years, the next life cycle of coaching and recruiting and philosophy?
I kind of wonder how it affects quarterback recruiting as well, because I don't think you try to build a national title contender around a Stetson Bennett type.
Yeah.
But I also think if you're a smart coach in this era, with the one free transfer and the quarterbacks moving around faster and more often than ever, how do you make sure you have a Stetson Bennett on your roster?
I think you find that 3-star that loves the program, that like grew up. Oh man, I love this.
The Mac Jones is probably the better example of that. And Mac Jones was committed to Kentucky before Alabama offered him. He came out of nowhere. He was a good high school quarterback that had an SEC offer already.
Yeah.
But Mac Jones committed to Alabama remember Jalen Hurts had not gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. When he committed, Jalen Hurts was going to get there, or Jalen Hurts was there. He'd been through spring practice, had not become the starting quarterback yet as a true freshman.
And Tua, he got to play in that. He won the starting job.
But Tua was committed at the time.
Yeah.
So when Mac committed, he didn't care. He knew he was behind Jalen Hurts into it. It did not bother him.
Here's the question with that, though. Are there coaching staffs who are bold enough to see that kid, the Matt Cassel, the Mac Jones, who's sitting there and say, hey, do you want to keep riding the pine there? You may never get on the field, or come start for us at Kentucky. Does Kentucky, in the NIL portal era, go make another run at Mac Jones and say, you're not going to get on the field there?
It's a great question.
Come here and redo this mistake that you made.
It is a great question.
I don't know if you can do that.
But here's the thing. I think that person, and it's interesting we say that about Stetson Bennett, who did transfer.
Yes.
After his first year.
Circled back to Georgia.
But came back as a scholarship player. Yes. That's when everybody says walk on, walk on, walk on. He came back as a scholarship quarterback.
Proved himself in JUCO and earned it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, we're here down in San Antonio. Andy, we've been here. Every coach you talk to, every single coach, when you start talking about the issues that are going on in the sport, everyone wants to talk about the portal, and we can't manage these rosters. We don't know how to keep guys. What are we doing on the rules of getting guys? All this stuff, the NCAA is doing nothing about any of the tampering and any of all that stuff. I don't know what the answer is. I think you're right that you want to have that 3-star kid that loves your program and just, you know, I grew up wanting to be an Alabama quarterback.
You got a better chance of keeping that guy.
Yeah.
You just do.
You got a better chance, but if coaches, you know that kid is good and they need a kid and maybe he's a little green, but you see, you know, maybe it's a stretch to say that you're going to fish in the portal or tamper with a guy that hadn't played that much, but maybe not. And maybe, you know, you're right. I don't know what the next 5 years of college football are going to look like, because we're going into a new era. And as crazy as this year has been, Andy, nobody has a good idea for how to fix this or what the rule changes are going to be or what things are going to look like. And I wrote about this week, and I had another coach tonight I was talking to who I asked him what his fix was. I don't think he had read my column, but he pitched my column to me, which was, we got to have a collective bargaining agreement. Yeah, we got to have contracts, all this stuff.
So I wrote it when the Northwestern players tried to unionize.
Mm-hmm.
I said there will be a day, because, you know, obviously Northwestern reacted very – you know, angrily, and the NCAA.
You kids are not doing this.
Yeah. And I wrote that there will be a day when you are going to wish that they had a collective bargaining, or, you know, you could make a collective bargaining agreement with it. They had a bargaining unit that you could talk to. I think that day came last year.
Yeah.
I think it came when they were trying to get the teams back on the field, and because the players wanted to play,
mm-hmm.
but there was no way for them to speak with one voice and say, we would like to play. Let's talk about this and hammer it out.
They tried,
the NFL did.
Even Trevor Lawrence, who on the West Coast was running that.
There were guys in the Pac-12.
Yeah,
there was a D tackle at Washington State.
It sounded like that was. Yeah. It's it, from the way that they presented it, it was not as many players as it seemed and when it initially came out. And I think ultimately, you know, these players, a lot of them know each other, but having them one unit is 130 teams. Even in the Power 5, just the Power 5 is twice as big as the NFL with rosters that are twice as big within that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people.
Well, and it's funny because I think everybody assumes that they'll try to grab all the power. I actually think it will be more reasonable than people realize because there are a lot more people at the bottom that they'll be trying to protect, mm-hmm. as opposed at the expense of the people at the top, more than likely.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. That's what the NBA does. Like, yeah. LeBron James does not make what he's worth from the Lakers.
Yep.
Now Nike's allowed to make him whole. So,
and Space Jam. Yeah. Don't forget. Exactly. Yeah. But I think, you know, ultimately, Andy, are we in agreement that college football at its current state with the roster turnover is unsustainable overall?
I think it's sustainable.
Do you think it's good for the game?
You want me to say selfishly or what?
I mean,
let me throw this out there because nobody's going to want to hear this. Mm-hmm. But if you look deep in your heart of hearts, you know I'm right.
Okay.
What's our favorite part of every NBA offseason?
Well, so now we're... See, I hate this.
What's our favorite part of every NFL offseason?
It's NBA Twitter's favorite part. I like the playoffs. I do not actually like all of the free agency nonsense.
I love the NBA playoffs too, but I love the free agency nonsense.
People get into it. I'm not that big of a fan of it. So as
long as... Like, with college football, like the Caleb Williams drama, as long as you're not an Oklahoma fan, it's fascinating to watch.
It's fascinating, but Andy, that's like if it's the NBA, if that's every player every year. That is where we're talking about. I don't know that this is the same.
It's not every player. Every
it's a
year
lot
because they get,
more players.
They get one. Well, because there's a lot more players.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
They get one free transfer as an undergrad. Otherwise, you got to graduate.
Yeah,
it's a nice incentive to go to class. By the way,
true.
So,
true.
I don't. And as far as the, you know, I do feel bad. Like I feel bad for the FCS coaches who have to deal with their rosters getting raided.
Yes,
that sort of thing. Do I feel bad for the Power 5 head coaches? Not in the least.
Mm-hmm.
To quote the great Don Draper to Peggy Olson, that's what the money's for.
I get that, but I think from where I'm looking at, okay, you're talking about the casual fans, the people that turns college football from a pretty popular sport into the second most popular sport.
Now those fans get something to entertain
Here's what I'm saying. I think you risk some tune-out factor when it's like college basketball. It's where college basketball is right now. Who are the good players and where do I need to be watching?
Nope.
And they don't
figure that out. I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because it's not basketball.
That's true, I guess.
It's football.
That's
people
fair.
People like football better than basketball. I don't know how...
I think you may... I still think you may lose some
folks.
People
can't seem to figure that out.
Like, I still think you may lose some people, Andy. I'm telling you. I mean, I think you can make college football less popular. College basketball, even though it's not football, is not as popular as it was 10 or 15 years ago, and it's because of the star power aspect, and people don't know who are the guys that need to be watching. The one-and-done factor is a huge factor.
But the stars leave.
Well, that's what I'm
saying.
They're
not done.
Well, that's what I'm
saying. They're just somewhere else.
I know, but that's
football.
What I'm saying. But if their guys are moving around, I think you're going to lose some casual fans. That's what I'm saying.
Then you pick up ones where they go.
Maybe.
Like that's
not at the programs. I'm talking about people that kind of like the sport in general and can pay some attention to it. You have obviously the people that are
I'm not
tribal
terribly
on their
worried.
Fans.
I'm not terribly worried about the people that are aging out.
Fair enough. We'll see.
I don't think the younger generation of fans really cares.
Maybe not. Maybe not. I do. I guess I'm getting old and crusty.
You are. You're getting crotchety.
I think I am. I think I'm getting grouchy and all this stuff. Either way, I the next 5 years of college football, as crazy as the last year has been, I don't know. Other than the last time I sort of felt like this was maybe around the time realignment was happening 10 years ago. Not as much this recent.
Yeah,
round.
And
we don't know what the next 5 years are going to look
like.
When
realignment happened and then the cord cutting started, and we're like, the TV bubble's going to burst. And they're going to make more money than ever with their next TV deals. It's going to like that. And that's the thing. The sport has never been healthier from a bottom line standpoint.
Yeah.
And now that doesn't guarantee continued success by any stretch. And you're right. If you turn off enough fans, the bottom line piece gets a lot worse as you go forward.
I will say the one fans who I don't care about and who I don't buy as people who are not going to watch the game are the, these kids are selfish. This is a generational issue. It's not. They just have more options, and people have woken up, and college ball has changed, and people have paid more attention to. The idea that you're locking these kids up is has always been wrong, and now it's just they have more power. And so those folks were like, I'm not watching college football anymore. I'm tired of the kids these days. I don't believe you.
We saw you tweeted us that if they got NIL money, you wouldn't watch.
And here we
are.
And
we watched the ratings go up. So we know you lied about that.
Yes. So, you know, I'm just really fascinated to see what the next 5 years looks like, because some form of legislation is coming. But I've asked coaches this week, what would you do to change this? And everyone's like, I don't know.
Here's the problem. And this is like, if you talk to some of the conference commissioners, the ones who are more forward looking will tell you the solution has to be something that will not get them dragged to federal court again.
Very important. And people don't like going to federal court, Andy. Correct. I've heard this.
None of their old rules would withstand a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what that Supreme Court, the Alston decision, it wasn't specifically about like colleges paying players directly other than educational expenses. But if you read both of the opinions that were handed down, there was the majority opinion and then the consenting opinion. The Kavanaugh consenting opinion was very strongly worded. It was probably more look at me. But if you read the one the other eight justices put their names to, it said the same things, just in less strong words.
A lot of the same things we've been saying over the last decade.
And I think that's the issue is the smarter commissioners, athletic directors understand you cannot go back. So any rule that looks like what you had before isn't going to fly. Now, if you bargain with the players and they say, we're willing to, you know, let you have these rules in exchange for this, then yes, you can.
I still think even forming some sort of a union or forming something, like we said, the number of players, and you know, now it's so built in the pros that the draft classes come in. It's a very, you know, here's where you got to do to, you know, you're coming into the players union and all that stuff. Forming it from scratch in college football for all the reasons we talked about.
Very
I don't know how you get there.
You have private universities. You have public universities.
I don't know how you get there.
And every state has
thinking
its,
about
has
it
its
is giving
laws.
Me a headache already.
So what you may have to accept is this is the way it's going to be for a little while.
For a little while, I agree with you,
And again, you can complain about it.
They're going to.
You can turn off the sport.
I don't think that many people will in the immediate future. I don't think.
Or, and I know a lot of people aren't going to like this, but I bet they wind up doing it. You can just sit back and enjoy it.
Maybe
you could turn it into a sport of its own.
I do like a more listen, Andy. We are financially invested in college football being interesting.
Absolutely.
This has been the most I've been covering college football since 2008. You've done it longer than I have. Most interesting year in the sport
ever
seen.
By far,
unbelievable. And, you know, I think ultimately, again, the sport is more fair and equitable. Covering, watching, consuming, following college football makes me not wince and just kind of,
it's fair and equitable to the players. It is not a fair, there's no parity or anything like that.
No, I'm talking about just the players. It's a less exploitative process.
The Illinois fans and the Cal fans are like, well, it's not.
Yeah, now y'all.
Not for us.
Y'all have had a rough one.
Yeah.
Props. And I don't know that it's going to help you because, again, you talk to enough coaches about the transfer portal. What it has basically done, not all the time, but hey, we're a farm system now for the larger programs. And I'm like, yeah, kind of. You've seen it play out when really good players, and we see we have Jacob Cowing this year. We have Cam Ward at UIW.
Yep.
Who are some other guys who have moved?
But can I give you another example, though?
Please do.
It does work the other way.
Well, sure, sometimes.
The ACC Defensive Player of the Year would have been a role player on this Georgia defense.
That's true.
That Jermaine Johnson.
Yes.
Florida State.
It does sometimes, but even still, I think more often that's I think,
but again,
Kirby Smart didn't lose sleep.
I don't feel bad about Incarnate Word losing its quarterback.
Yeah, that's
fine. Cam Ward deserves to play in the Power Five, if he's good enough, then he should be allowed to go play.
I agree.
The Power Five.
I don't have a problem with it. I think it's just it's just an interesting situation. It's a new world of college football. I feel a little bad for the coaches. That just sucks. Like, that sucks, Andy.
That's what the money's for.
I know, but that just sucks. They can cash the checks. Although, how much is Incarnate Word's?
That's
probably $150, maybe something along those lines. Maybe that might even be a little much.
No, I think they're making a little more than that now.
Yeah. But, either way, it still sucks for him, Andy.
Of course.
And so, you know, I think that when you have, especially when you have fans of not necessarily Incarnate Word, but the Wyomings and the UTEPs and these fan bases who, when you have these players, you know, the Chucky Keatons of the world, Andy, these beloved players that we see at these smaller programs, now it's going to be a little weird when those guys are moving up and you're not going to see
those guys. Grayson McCall stayed.
Yeah, that's true, but I think he led
the country in yards per attempt.
I'm not saying every guy is going to do it, but I'm just saying college football might lose a little bit of personality, a little bit of diversity, and seeing these programs have
will
these
it,
special players.
Or will the next guy who pops up at Toledo...
he's not going to be a special.
That Michigan State's going to steal?
They're not just going to be cranking out these guys, the smaller programs. I watch a ton of college football.
They're not going to crank them out, but somebody's always going to have one.
But like, I know, but like the Sincere McCormicks of the world, or Khalil Pimpletons of the world. These guys...
I knew you were going to Pimpleton.
Like, these guys that like are super, super, super fun players. You're not going to see them for 4 years at the same place. You might see some of
them. Great. So you get to see them at two different places. Even better.
I know, Andy.
See him play in front of 90,000 people
now.
I'm not
saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad. I'm just saying college football is going to change a little bit. And I liked those guys that, like, you see them, you watch them, and they give these programs a true identity for a good 3-4 year period. That's all I'm saying. I'm not against it. I don't hate it. I'm just saying it's gonna take some getting used to.
It will, but you better get used to it.
Yeah, that's what it is right now. It is what it is.
Yeah. And look, as a coach told me today, and it's not just the coaches, it's the athletic directors and the coaches. We brought this on ourselves, hopping from job to job. But also the athletic directors with the quick trigger firings and that sort of thing.
Don't get me started, Andy.
Yeah, I mean,
on the decision making of college administrators.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a player, all you've ever seen is the grown-ups around you just constantly moving and leaving and or getting kicked out.
Commit to the school, not the coach. They yell at you and then they leave a year and a half later.
Yeah, so I really have no sympathy for these people who did bring it all upon themselves.
True, very true.
So,
and again, let's not lose sight of the big picture, though, Andy, is you've been running an exploitative entire operation enterprise for a long time, and now, well, as they say, it's less fun when the rabbit has the gun, and we're sitting there in that situation a little bit now, Andy. And
you had a nice hustle going for a long time.
You did.
And now, you know.
Things are a little different.
But here's the thing. You're still rich. Like, the money's still rolling in.
That's true.
Let's just let everybody enjoy this a little bit. And there will be some things to get used to, but they're also like, I don't know. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong. I honestly don't know how this is going to go over the next few years, but I feel like there are certain programs where it feels like perpetually there was no hope.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you can bring in like a new fancy transfer quarterback every year? And you have hope for 3 months.
It's the hope that kills you, Andy.
You get to hope for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then he takes the field and you're like, oh, that's why I had to transfer.
Yes.
But maybe he's that guy.
There's a lot
maybe
more.
Maybe he's Malik Willis.
Yes.
Coming in from Auburn to Liberty.
Yes. There's a lot more guys that disappoint you than guys that are going to fulfill all of your dreams and bring you that elusive title. But again, Andy, the big picture here, college football is just fascinating. And
it is.
I don't venture a guess of what the next year, Andy, much less the next 3, 5, 10 years, college football is going to look very, very different.
Let's think about this year. Because you mentioned it's been the most fascinating year. But let's talk about everything that's happened. First of all, you had the pandemic. You had you thought coming out of the pandemic, then the pandemic struck back. So they had to go through that all season. You had the change in the transfer rules.
That's April.
You had NIL comes July. In on July 1st. In mid-July, you have the Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC thing, which
starts another round of realignment.
You had a 12-team playoff proposal.
Oh, yes. That
in May.
We don't have time to yell about that, Andy. Listen, just an incredible... Incredible grift.
Can I propose something?
Because of hotel points and flight points.
So they're not gonna get this thing done. They may not get it done until 2026.
I can't even like. Oh my gosh, this is like it's a 8-foot putt, and they've been checking the line on this for 15 years.
The ACC is kind of the obstructionist in all this, and I feel bad for Jim Phillips because his only job really because he got. Saddled with a very long TV contract that is not beneficial to the ACC, that may outlast his term as commissioner.
It was fun for 3 or 4 years, Andy.
That he had nothing to do with, obviously. Yeah. But so the only thing he can do, and basically I wrote this when he started, like there was probably a card on his desk when he got to Greensboro that said, "Welcome to the ACC. Your job is to make Notre Dame join in football." And they're not going to. And all this, I don't know if it's all this is them trying to block this so Notre Dame doesn't get in a situation where it never has to join a conference in football, which if the 12-team playoff goes through and they're 6 at-large, Notre Dame will never, ever have to join a conference in football. But at this point, can we just do single combat between Jim Phillips and Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD?
I'd like to watch
and
it.
And if Swarbrick wins... Then Notre Dame never has to join the ACC in football. And if Phillips wins, then Notre Dame immediately has to join the ACC. And we can just forget. And the ACC can be like, okay, now let's get on with this.
The 1 year of ACC membership was just so funny. We knew it was going to be. Yeah. And then seeing it be a reality was somehow even funnier than I thought it was going to be coming into the season.
Yeah. But who'd have thought Notre Dame and the SEC? I mean, those are really interesting bedfellows. But they are... They are in lockstep on this thing because it benefits both of them. The Big Ten's in a weird spot because it's trying to, you know, it's got the relationship with the Pac-12 and the Rose Bowl. It's trying to help those guys out. But the Big Ten, let's be honest, the Big Ten's needs from a business standpoint are more closely aligned with the SEC's. Yeah. And the ACC is in this alliance with the Big Ten and the Pac-12, but their needs are different.
Any brass tacks, is today... Just sort of, you know, sort of a slight speed bump. Are they going to get this done before 26? Do you think?
I'm not optimistic now. I mean,
I just think there's too much money to be made.
That's the part I don't.
That's where I'm like, I don't understand. What are y'all doing?
If you're Jim Phillips, you do understand if Clemson's not going to be good.
Yeah, which let's
and we don't know if they are or not.
If they're sitting there at that 3-2 in the middle of next
Clemson's
season.
Not going to be great.
Yes. Not going to be.
They were good this season.
We're penciling him for the playoff preseason every single year.
Clemson's not going to be great. And now maybe Mario Cristobal makes Miami like that.
Yeah.
Or Mac makes North Carolina that. But right now, your hopes are all pinned to Clemson. If they're not going to be great, you're probably no different than the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And you need
the ACC was bad this year, Andy. Yeah. It wasn't as bad as the Pac-12, but man. Just watching a lot of, like, listen, Pitt, great year. Wake Forest, great year. Andy, not to go full SEC on them. Where does Pitt finish in the SEC this year?
Oh, we're going to play this game?
We got to play it a little
bit. Come on, Feinbaum.
We
got to
play it a little bit. We got to play it a little bit.
Are they in the East or the West?
We'll just throw it all. We'll just, if we're power ranking it. Are they better than Kentucky, Andy?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a middle of the pack.
Yeah. Fourth, fifth, sixth.
Something like that.
Yeah. I think that's probably right. So, you know, it's... Andy, I'm tired of it, quite frankly. I think fans are as well. We get to where it's like, well... Because I thought we'd get an announcement today.
I mean, here's the... I didn't.
Okay.
And I'm the one who said, bet the farm. Bet everything you own that they get this thing started in 2023. Because they're not stupid enough to leave all that money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out they might be.
It just flies in the face of every decision that we have seen in college football that has changed the entire picture of the entire sport for the last 15, 20 years. you know, my golden rule of realignment is if it makes sense, C-E-N-T-S, it makes sense. And here we are, and, you know, it just seems like they're just sort of batting it around.
And I feel bad for George Kliavkov because he didn't he's the new Pac-12 commissioner.
Yes.
He came into this from a different industry, but clearly did his homework, understands the issues, understands where they're at. And he knows they have to expand. And you can tell from hearing him talk about this that he's just like, what have I gotten myself into? What's wrong with these people?
This is the main thing. Like, for all the issues and for all the how do we do this, how do we do this, what if we do this, how do we get access, you know, who's got automatic quality, like, it's going to expand. I'm just tired of having to, like, talk about it. It's not interesting. It's going
to
expand.
You're going to go to 12. If you're the ACC, I don't care if you want 8.
Yes.
Like, at a certain point, even your alliance members in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to be like, either vote for this or we'll do it without. Because here's the thing. There are only two entities that you can't have a playoff without. The Big Ten and the SEC. If you aren't the Big Ten and you aren't the SEC,
jump on or
get out of the way.
You're not going to stop it. So, you know, it's, again, I'm annoyed, tired of talking about it because it's just like, let's just make it happen. Today, I was very annoyed reading our.
Well, I would love for Jim Phillips to get up and explain why.
Yeah.
Give us one good reason why you'd like it to not be what everybody else wants it to be.
What would you, if he's doing that, what is, if you're Jim Phillips, give me the Jim Phillips diatribe if he gets
you want
in front
the honest
of the
one?
I need
this to be 8 teams with 6 automatic bids to force Notre Dame into my conference.
Okay.
That's really what it is.
But if he's trying to be more diplomatic, how do you sell that?
Well, you know, I don't want to play that many. I don't know if the student athletes should be playing that many games.
But Mr. Phillips, doesn't the FCS have a 2014 playoff? And don't some of those teams play 16 games if you didn't get the bye and you made the championship game?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You don't really care about that.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
So anyway, we're going to get an expanded playoff. And again, not to get a different outcome, Andy, to get more invested fan bases. There's so many people that are like, it's just going to end the same way. It's like, guys, like, listen to what people are saying. We kind of know that.
Yeah.
But it's tiring, especially, I think, and I do think, now, if there's a path to an expanded playoff equaling more parity.
I would love it if it would end a different way.
Yes.
But guess what year it ended a different way?
Which way in, or which year, Andy?
This year.
Exactly. We got a Cincy. We got a Michigan. I don't think anybody was picking. Well, some people might have picked
Georgia
Cincy.
Hasn't won a national title.
Well, yes.
In
and at the
41
top.
Years.
At the top. Yes, that's also
the
true.
Last time Georgia won a national title, I was 2.
I was not born.
Yeah.
So that's always a good time.
So this is a different ending.
Yeah. I think, Andy, ultimately, if there's a path to it changing things, it's that. One of the things that we've been hearing, you know, from the recruiting trail is unless you're Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, or Georgia, you're pitching, hey, come to the if you're not here, you're not getting in the playoff. And that's a pretty powerful recruiting tool.
Right.
And I think if you expand it, that takes that away from them.
Right. And there will be a lot more.
Yes.
Know?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have a ton.
Suddenly Penn State can say
exactly.
that. Wisconsin
at,
can say
you
that.
Look at a 12-team playoff. I mean, you're going to have, you know, all kinds of stuff in there. So that, I think, I don't know that will have a very acute impact, but it's not going to make it worse, Andy. And I think we've heard that a lot in the playoff era, that's a really powerful pitch that those schools are using. And I think if you take that away and you have more access, I don't know that I'd bet my life on it.
I don't think it changes who the national champion is most years.
No.
But I think it has a lot more fan bases having a lot more fun a lot deeper into the season.
Does it, Andy? Here's the biggest issue I think that college football is dealing with right now. And it's kind of been this way for a long time. But you look at the Alabamas, the Georgias, the Ohio States. They only play 3 to 5 losable games a year. Does that number grow in an expanded playoff?
Well, yes. If they have to play more playoff
That's a good
games.
Point. Yeah, the back end. I was talking more regular season, but you're right.
Look at Georgia's schedule, which is Georgia's future schedule is clearly designed for an expanded playoff.
Mm-hmm.
They have added losable games to their future schedules with an eye on the playoff, knowing that you don't have to win them all.
10-2 gets you in as the sixth.
Or let's say you lose a couple, you got a young team, you start the season off with a couple losses, and you go on a run, you win the league. You're in.
Yeah. I'm really excited for the future of college football. It's messy. It's annoying right now. There's a lot of complaining, but it's really interesting and it's really unpredictable. Well, and that's good for business.
It looked like people had fun this year back at the stadiums.
I know I did.
It was beautiful to watch. Mm-hmm. Like Purdue when they beat Iowa and when they beat Michigan State. Like that was a joy to watch. Michigan when they beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
How beautiful was that?
It was, I mean, other than, are we going to go Michigan beating Ohio State as the only, Georgia over Bama, the only game that was more, I guess if we're going to rank the cathartic wins of the season.
I got one for you. Washington State fans storming the field at Washington.
That was pretty awesome. I have not seen that one before. That was pretty awesome. That was fantastic. But Andy, just a great season overall. I don't know. You know, people want to rank like the wildest seasons. I think for a lot of people, it's
unsatisfying because it ended with an all SEC championship game. But it was a good championship.
It was a great game. I loved every second of this game. And I think Andy, like, you know, like I said, I don't know about the wildest seasons. Like 2007's always been like the gold standard. But man, this was a really interesting season.
I was so happy to see everybody back in the stadiums and enjoying themselves.
That was a big part of it. But you have the Cincinnati storyline all season. It was fantastic. Shout out to the boys at UTSA who gave us a very fun season. But you have, you know, Michigan upsetting the apple cart, just absolutely wrecking a lot of narratives, Andy. The rough year for narratives, by the way.
how about this transfer? I'll give you a transfer portal one.
Yes.
Jason Brown going from St. Francis in Pennsylvania, not winning the job at South Carolina, but winding up beating Florida and Auburn
as the third stringer or fourth stringer, yes. I believe, something along those lines.
So you can say the transfer portal is awful and it's good, but that you don't get that story without it.
I loved this season, Andy. This was just a fantastic year. I'm going to remember a lot from this year. Really fun Ole Miss season. A lot of
Baylor.
Baylor had a really
incredible
great year.
Story this season.
Andy, there's the reason why I love college football is the regional and the diversity on the field, the regional aspects of it, and the diversity
and
on the field.
Schematic diversity, yes.
All those things. This is why I love it. You can watch, you know, different leagues, different places. It's not like the NFL in that way. So many fun teams this year. So many. We didn't get, Coastal. We didn't get the same Coastal year that we got last season, but
still good.
Very fun. One of the most fun offenses to watch. I think we're going to see a lot of teams steal a lot of those concepts.
Yeah. Yep.
That's coming. If you know a linebacker, say a prayer for him because it's going to be a rough five years for them.
Yeah, you're going to become what's known as a conflict player, and you're going to be very conflicted.
Not great. But just, Andy, I love this season. I'm excited to do it again in start the countdown. What do we got? 8 months. I'm sad we don't get the spring FCS season this year. But 8 months from now, we're gonna do it again, and it's gonna be fantastic.
We're gonna come up with all sorts of off-season narratives that we will talk ourselves into. That by August we will be acting like they're complete fact when all we've been doing is guessing for 8 months. And then the first week of the season, we'll just blow them up. It's going to be amazing.
You know, you don't know what an offseason is going to hold. I think we kind of knew last year the transfer portal was going to be coming. Or not the transfer portal.
NIL.
The free transfer. Yeah. NIL, we thought was going to be at the end, like December or January, right?
We knew it was coming because the Florida law was going into effect when it was.
Yeah, I guess nationwide or whatever. But you never really know. Obviously, Texas and Oklahoma, unless you were Greg Sankey or NAD.
Yeah.
Or at Texas and Oklahoma. We didn't know that.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you, Andy, in the next 7 months, there's going to be stuff that we don't know is going to happen. And at The Athletic, we're going to write about it. We're going to talk about it on the Andy Staples Show.
We're going to talk about it on Football and Grits. We're going to talk
Power
about
Hour,
it on
One True Pod. All these shows.
Stars Matter.
Yes. It's going to be a great offseason. I'm looking forward to it, Andy.
Thank you guys so much for listening all season. It's been a joy. And we've seen the numbers. More of you guys tune in every week, and thank you so much. Thank you for telling your friends about the show. Thank you for hitting subscribe. Thank you for leaving the 5-star reviews. We love you, and I'm excited because I am hoping the world does start to open up a little more. We've got some fun ideas, things we wanted to do this season.
They won't have to wait 7 months for more podcasts or content on our site.
Yeah, no, we will have this thing chock full in the off season. But I want to do live shows. Get out and see some of you guys. And I think we're going to be able to do that this year. And we're going to have more cool guests. I'm talking to somebody tomorrow for a show that's going to run next week. That it's going to just be an awesome interview. I know it already. But I cannot thank you guys enough for taking this journey with us and for having fun and for adopting all our little sayings. And when people tweet "stars matter" at me and Ari, it's just
the brand
wonderful.
Is strong with our you have a friend. Oh, Ari, yeah.
Ari has built this brand into something truly, truly special. I think now I owe him all the free restaurant bread that he can eat for correctly.
Bold move, Mari. I thought Alabama was winning this thing tonight. They did not.
It's not a national championship game if I can't predict the score incorrectly. So that never changed. Lots of things changed in college football this year. That did not. But thank you so much. We had a great time this season. And stay with us because it never stops here at the Andy Staples Show and Friends. We'll talk to you soon.